tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Yes! I am so pumped right now!
Yes! Ready to fight!
Woo! Valyrian Steel Blade, check. Dragon Glass, we got none. We're good. We're still going to be good. We're going to be okay. Hey, everybody, welcome to your Game of Thrones After Buzz TV After Show Hard Home episode. What is it? Episode 7?
8?
Season 5? No, it's episode
7.
Is it 8?
I think it's 8.
Oh my gosh, we're almost done. It's episode 8 of season 5. Everybody, my name is Kyle Maddock. I'm going to be your host tonight. To my left, I have the lovely Kristen Snyder.
And I'll be protecting you.
Thank you very much. And to her left, I have Sarah Strick.
Hello, everyone. So excited to talk tonight. And thank you for being patient and waiting with us. Sorry about the delay.
There we go. And we peeled him off the couch to bring him over to the desk, Ryan Malady.
I don't like change. I'm scared.
Hi, I'm Ryan Malady. And I will be your chat correspondent. Go to youtube.com/AfterBuzzTV to join the conversation.
Here we go. Nice. And you're going to be under Ryan Malady today.
I'm under Ryan Malady tonight.
All right, there
Man
we go.
Man of many faces.
Awesome, awesome. What'd you guys feel? I mean, I know we're all jazzed about this, but we like this episode, right?
Favorite episode of the season.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm like, finally, we are back and watching Game of Thrones. Like, this felt like a Game of Thrones episode. This is why we love Game of Thrones.
But I haven't been, like, feeling that. Like, I haven't been feeling negative all season. Like, it hasn't been something that it's been consciously, like, weighing on my shoulders or anything that I was like, oh, where's the big brawling scenes? This just heightened the show.
Absolutely.
It was invigorating. The last section was obviously, they took their time with it. They built everything up. I thought it was done so well, but I don't want to. It's my favorite episode of the season so far, but I'm not knocking the season.
Absolutely. So. You need that court intrigue and the slow burn sometimes and stuff like that, and sometimes you just need that action sequence and everything together just, you know, makes the show so good.
Yeah,
so.
I can't remember the last time I literally got out of my chair and screamed during
what
an episode.
Did we do?
Tonight we all screamed during the viewing of this. We watched it all together, and literally I was like, oh, and we probably just scared some people.
It was a good one. It was a good one. So let's start off this week in Meereen. Let's start with Tyrion and Jorah standing before the Queen of Dragons.
Mm.
There you go. How did you think that was going to go down?
We'd all kind of predicted that the fighting pits were going to come into play, and whether or not Daenerys was going to accept Tyrion's help. What I liked most about this was how they visually kind of presented it. So when you watched how, before, all of the upshots of looking up at Daenerys while Tyrion and Jorah are on the floor, and then as he gets the chance to speak to her, to advise her on what she should do, he climbs a couple steps and he becomes on the same plane as Jorah. So he's no longer shorter than him. The dwarf, he climbs those steps, he's on that next platform.
Interesting.
And when you look at it camera height, he is now just as tall as Jorah. And this is right before, of course, Jorah gets banished again.
That's some nice imagery that you noticed there.
Great.
That's a good point. Yeah, I totally, I knew that Tyrion was going to be an advisor to Dany. You know, like, it's just going to happen. I mean, he's smart. He's there for a reason. And Jorah, I didn't know what his fate was going to be, but I just feel bad. He's just the man of exile. Like, no matter where he goes, he just gets exiled from it.
Yeah, but did Tyrion do him a favor? Question. Do you think he did? Because he didn't. He could have easily said, yeah, you should kill him.
I don't think he was doing anyone any favors. I think he was just honest.
Honest.
I think he was advising the way he plans on advising, which is honestly.
Yeah.
I will go on the opposite side of that, and I'll say it was a bit of a favor, because if this was any other man who he wouldn't have just, like, gotten to know through the traveling experience that they had together and getting to know Jorah that way, I think he probably would advise her to kill someone who betrayed her.
Yeah. And Jorah did kidnap Tyrion, so Tyrion's a little like,
yeah.
To me, this first section of advisement was very much him being cautious. He didn't really tell her what to do. He laid out what she couldn't do and made her make the decision. Mm-hmm. So as much as he was advising, he really just went through all the steps of everything that the audience knows and that Daenerys already knows about loyalty, about his devotion, about the fact that he's probably in love with her. He wasn't like, you should banish Jorah and you should do this. He simply said he can't be by your side and you shouldn't get rid of people who are devoted to you. He actually didn't give her a decision. He just was the person who showed her all of the information in a concise way and highlighting the very important facts.
Interesting.
Sometimes you want to hear people say those things out loud, though, because, like, we've been discussing that Jorah is in love with Dany for years, but to actually hear it out loud with him standing right there beside her was just powerful, the way he delivered it.
Mm-hmm. Also, though, it did bring it to the light of everyone else in the room. It was being able, he showed that he can say things that people do keep the personal. He wasn't just listing the political impacts, the people impacts. Right. He was also willing to put her personal life into the decision making. But what I will say, I thought it was a good place for him to kind of initiate his rapport with her. But the second conversation that we get of just the two of them over wine, now I'm having... I would have been with Ryan and been like, yes, he's a great advisor. But the advice he started giving her in the second conversation, I felt like we were playing two truths and a lie. Some of the stuff he was saying, I thought was just outright lies.
What, that maybe she shouldn't go to Westeros?
No. For instance, when he lists the things fighting against her, he's like, there's no more Starks. That's a lie. He says...
I think as far as money goes to support her.
I mean, I understand maybe, but it just kind of felt he listed off a bunch of things. He was like, basically, there's no more Starks, there's no more Targaryens, and then he also added, and then none of the heads of the Lannister household are going to support you.
Well, according to him, how many Starks are left? I think he thinks Sansa left. He doesn't know that any of them are alive.
Yeah, he states them all as truths. I'm not saying he's intentionally lying. Mm-hmm. I'm saying as an audience member, I was like, I don't know if this is true. I don't know if that's true. Is it really sound advice if I don't know if I believe it?
It's popular opinion, though.
Yeah, and I think that he was right to tell her to want other things besides the throne, because that's not the most important thing, and it's nice to finally hear someone say that in the show that's called Game of Thrones, that the throne is not the most important thing, that we need to look beyond that and the real meaning behind what the throne is.
Hmm. I thought it was interesting when he asked her who was going to support her when she got back there, and all these places, like, why are they going to come up and stand up for you? Yeah, maybe the common people will, but you did that here, and you're having a hard time without the rich people supporting you, too. So, I'm curious what houses do you think would support Daenerys when she returned to Westeros?
I'm hoping Dorne.
I think what we're seeing in this season is that she mentions, like, in the key line that she's going to break the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm going to say is the wheel's already breaking itself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she isn't privy to knowing exactly what's going on, but we are. Yep. We are seeing that houses are being broken already. The when you're talking about the Lords of the Vale, that house has really been destroyed. I mean, it's in the hands of a little disturbed boy.
The Vale. I feel like the Vale is the house that's been touched the least during all the war.
They
lost the mom. And they really haven't lost anyone else.
Well, except for the Hand of the King that was murdered that incited the whole show.
Well, that was the whole show, yes. Okay, so two people. But I feel like there's a lot less than most
the
houses.
Head. Yes, but that's dismantled. The Lannisters are ones in Dorne doing who knows what, being questioned. One's in prison. Mm-hmm. One's trapped in his room.
Yeah, it's crumbling.
Like, they're all crumbling. You have also the Tyrells in jeopardy. Who knows what's going on with the Greyjoys? We need to see a little bit more of them.
Yeah,
we
don't know.
The Martells just lost one of their princes. Like, all the houses are already crumbling. We're not talking about she's going to war against these strong houses that are really doing well with their alliances.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
everyone's betraying everyone. So
I think our
situation better.
I just asked the people in the chat which houses they think would support Daenerys Targaryen in Westeros. And Akash says Tyrell and Martells would, more than likely. Keanu says Sansa Bolton would. But I just want to keep calling her Stark. I can't call her Bolton. And then also people think the people of Fleabottom would probably support someone with a dragon.
There you go.
Also,
think so.
The whole people at the wall might support.
Mm. I mean, who knows? I guess everyone would just have to weigh their options. And, you know, there's all the what do we really want things. So,
what I like is the few people from the houses that are being crushed, the ones that we like, seem to be going through this process where they're adopted to other houses. Like right now, Jamie being in Dorne, I feel like there may be in the future, the Martells may, like, eventually there be an alliance there. They'll adopt him, and, like, we all love Tyrion, and now he is in Meereen with Dany, so it's like I feel like our favorite members from the houses that maybe we didn't love initially, like, they're still going to become maybe part of a new house.
And we're still waiting for Varys too.
Where is Varys there? It is interesting that we get in this that Daenerys finally finds out that Varys may not be this evil person that's been against him against her the whole time, and may actually be helping her out. So she's sort of getting all this information. And
if her goal is to have the houses destroyed, he could be a very good ally because he doesn't have a house.
Yep.
He doesn't really represent a party, to speak.
Did you guys think it was a little weird that she was so quickly sitting alone in a room with Tyrion? I was like, where are the guards? This is a little dangerous. What's happening here? A little out of it. But anyway, I guess that's just a little pet peeve of mine from this episode.
I get it, but I feel like he's someone who's rarely easy to trust after you let him speak. I feel like you can really get to know
dangerous.
Him. Yeah, he could. If he was a Varys type, he would be so dangerous. Really.
What do you guys think about Jorah going back to the Slaver?
I think as soon as he got Grayscale, his fate was pretty much sealed. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I feel like if he can, you know, at least be seen as a devoted man in Daenerys' eyes at least one more time, and he can die in peace.
I guess my theory is, I don't know, I'm this theory here, is that he's going to try to prove himself and in the fighting pit, so very much like an old Roman thing, if you're the hero, the people want you. Mm. Yeah. And if all of a sudden all the people like Jorah, Daenerys can keep him.
We're going to need him.
I'm thinking that's what's going
to
happen.
We're going to need him to hold the city together. We need a hero.
We need a hero. Awesome. So,
for you, Khaleesi.
Yeah, so let's head out of there. But before we go over to Arya's storyline, I just want to talk to the viewers for a second. We love hearing from you guys. We love the comments. We love the tweets. We read them all. You can see we've been very active in the YouTube comments this season. And we've been chatting. And we want you to know that right now, for the next couple of weeks, we are doing a listener survey on podcast1.com. We'd love you to go there, fill out the listener survey, and you know you can have an impact on how to make the show the best it can possibly be. So please head over there right now, check it out, podcast1.com. That's podcast1 spelled out, so O-N-E.com. And thank you guys, keep commenting. We love it.
Yep, that would really help us out, guys. So thank you.
Ooh.
And if you liked that or didn't like that, note that in the survey.
Adding that to our list.
So let's head over to Arya, or should I say Lana, or Lana.
See, I was afraid her face was going to change, so I'm glad that she's just taking on this new identity, and we can still recognize her at this point.
Yeah,
she's got some sweet new hair, though.
Got some dudes, yeah. So she's sort of on this training mission sort of thing to attempt to become someone else, it seems like, who is an oyster sales girl.
Right.
Sarah, what's up?
I just have very mixed reactions to this storyline, in that in my mind, I'm like, I like where this could be heading. She's intertwining herself in more plots. You've got the idea of her becoming this sort of assassin, whatnot. I think that they've introduced something interesting in who's actually on her side within, like, we've had this blonde girl who I've always pictured as against Arya, but in this episode, I was kind of like, really, is she? Or is she trying to protect her? How are these two people going to interact with Arya in this new schooling? But at the same time, it's like, I'm so used to seeing Arya being in charge of her own life and standing up to people and being rebellious and being a fighter that she's taking a step back to learn more actively. So now she's taking all the instructions. So to me, it's, I don't get to see that fighting spirit that I normally see in Arya as much right now.
I think she needs it, though.
It's a slow process, becoming an assassin.
But that's hard when what we left with her last season was this crazy, like, leaving the Hound bloody and basically yelping. And then we're going to this where she's being, like, slapped on the wrist a lot and told very much what to do and, like, what do you see, what do you not see. So it's just almost like she's slowed down a little bit. I think that she needs to slow down to learn more.
Yes.
And to get these bigger other stories that are going to intertwine her in things. But it's a little, like, at the moment I'm like,
you just want to see her kill people. So yeah. You're sadistic like Kristen over here.
I got
see.
That weird feeling that you got, Sarah.
What?
When the faceless man, Jack Nagar. When he said, oh, you know, it's all the same to the many-faced god. You know, what if she fails? It's all the same. So his indifference to her life kind of made me feel uncomfortable because he thought that she was in this safe haven with this guy, and now...
I don't believe him. I think that he knows she's going to be just fine. Like you said, Sarah, she was just fine before, and that's why she's gotten this far... so far with them. I think that girl's jealous because she hasn't been given this chance. Mm. I think it's obvious that Arya is bringing in a skill set that has gotten her further than that other girl. And I know that Jochen believes in her, or he wouldn't be doing this.
I think he's just saying that.
I'm not convinced. I could see it going either
way. I felt he was, his lines were a little manufactured just to give the audience some, like, edge of our seat.
Here's
like,
the thing.
Ooh, is it bad? Is bad things gonna
I
happen?
Think she needs to get in trouble here. Absolutely. It can't go picture perfect.
Something's going to go wrong.
Exactly. But I think he will be there as one face or another. Maybe he's the guy. Maybe he's the gambler. You know?
Yeah.
Oh. So,
why not?
Interesting.
I like it.
You think, though, this is just setting up as some sort of...
This is all a test. Why should we think this isn't still a test? Why should we think the game's over and her rule, now she's allowed to go out on her own? I don't believe it.
That's very sneaky. That's very sneaky. I don't know if I'd buy it. It was very sneaky. She has to kill this gambler guy who's sort of ripping off captains and ripping off their families and whatnot. And she has to go and poison him. So she's got to figure out how to do all this.
She's already feeding him.
Oh, yeah. She's going to put it on the vinegar.
Who else? Why else would you do it any other way?
He's not going to eat.
I'm a shot girl now.
But that's the genius of it. You set up this other person in this world, and they have a day-to-day activity. And so when you see them, there's nothing wrong.
I think that's how assassins normally do it. I mean, not saying I have another life or anything. But.
Says the girl with a dagger up her sleeve right now.
I mean, whatever.
So let's head out of there. Let's go to King's Landing. Cersei is in jail. This is yes. This makes me happy. I don't know. I guess I hate Cersei. We see a few different scenes where this Lady Sparrow, is
gigantic. Lady Sparrow.
Maybe just the angle, you know, Napoleon thing.
I guess it would. She's like towering and taking up the entire cell.
And Cersei just won't have it. She's got that strength still in her. She's trying to fight.
Only until they leave. And then she slurps water off the floor.
Oh, yeah. That's when you know you have it rough.
She's a survivor.
But she gets a visitor in the form of Qyburn. And she starts learning a little information about what's going on outside with Tommen not leaving his room. Mm-hmm. Uncle Kevin has come back into the fold, and he's the Hand of the King now. And
still hates her.
Yeah, still hates her. He's not coming to see her. So
I mean, as far as Tommen goes, you raise a baby, he's going to be a baby. She never left his side. Now the little bird can't fly. Like, you give your kids a ride their whole life, they're never going to leave the nest, and that's what's happening.
Mm. And I got to think that Kevin has a hand in that, too, with not going back, not wanting Tommen to go either. So.
Well, he's probably not going to chew up his food for him.
Brian, is there something on the...
Well, I'm just hoping that the people at home can still hear and see us, because I can't. It seems like there's some freezing. We are sorry for any technical difficulties during this show.
There we go.
But as far as Qyburn goes, I really liked his statement on how belief is often the death of reason. And it kind of just sums up how fragile the system is, and when you start giving people power, especially those who are in charge of a belief system, you no longer have the joys of making, you know, sound, reasonable decisions and having political debates. No, the person who's in charge of a belief system will take over. And that's what's happened.
Interesting. I like that we finally learned exactly what she is going to be tried for. Fornication, treason, and incest. Now, I'm assuming incest with Lancel, not incest with Jaime.
And the murder of her husband.
And the killing of the king.
Or, yeah.
Both very important
regicide.
Things. There we go. But Qyburn says there is hope, and the work continues. What's dun, he talking dun, about, dun. Everybody?
Man, bear, pig.
A little Gregorstein action.
No, but
in?
Seriously, so what's going to happen even when the mountain emerges as this Frankenstein creature? I mean, is he just going to be like a giant and stomp on people? Like, he's still one creature, right? So it's like, it's not like he can save Cersei and everyone from... I mean, can he himself...
Unless he's undead.
Undead.
Can he himself take on the High Sparrows and the Faith Militant all by himself? I really doubt it. So it's like, they're building up this creature.
I can't talk about this.
Oh, because you actually know. Well, what do you think, Sarah? What are they going to do with him? How is he going to come in and save the day?
I don't know exactly what they're going to do with him, but I think that since we've been playing with the idea of the undead... I think that he might have been able to harness that power in some way, much like the creature in Frankenstein. So this whole play, also I don't think the Faith Militant are that
strong.
Great at their job. They tend to have like one weapon and it's normally like a bludger. Like they are not attacking people with swords. And this is a famous warrior who... I think could take out quite a few of them.
So he's going to at least raise a problem. Yes. He's going to maybe put off the trials a little bit.
Also, we need to mention that he also managed there was a way to escape, and he didn't exactly say Mother's Mercy. Maybe there is another way.
Yeah, good point.
Can you guys explain to me what you think the Mother's Mercy is?
It's confession. I think it's very similar. I'm taking it as very similar to, like, the... Catholic religion, where when you confess to a priest, they kind of give you something to do to repent for your sins, and depending on the whatever, you, like the degree of which you've sinned, yes, it adjusts. Mm. You know, whether
Cersei, I do it all the time; it's no big deal.
She's against this idea.
So she's going to have to do something. If she does call for the Mother's Mercy, she'll have to face a punishment before she can be cleaned of her sins.
Mm-hmm. Mm. See, and that makes me nervous because the last time... I mean, Joffrey's definition of mercy is different from Cersei's, is different from, you know, Ned Stark. I mean, everyone has their own definition of mercy. So I'm just wondering what the High Sparrows...
Well, we've seen them do a punishment before, right? When they got the High Septon. We saw the Walk of Shame going on there.
Yes.
It doesn't seem like killing the king might deserve something a little bit more than that, but that's the one punishment we've seen the Sparrows dole out to someone before.
So. I feel like their mercy may be killing her.
I don't know. We'll see.
Mercy from this life.
Interesting.
Bye. You don't ever longer have to live in embarrassment. We're just going to kill you. That's our mercy.
Maybe. I mean, she's still fighting. And she still calls for Jaime at one point again. And it seems like she wants Jaime to do everything. Go down to Dorne. Get our daughter. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. You're in Dorne. Why don't you come back here and help me? It's like, you can't do everything.
But. I'm happy he's there. I feel like, honestly, he's safer now.
Safer away from her, I agree.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. But let's head up north to Winterfell.
Before we head up north to Winterfell, I just want to throw a question to Alexis real quick, our engineer. Alexis, can you hear me? We're getting a lot of stuff on our feed about freezing or whatnot. Would it help us to restart or, like, throw up another video, or should we just continue to go through this?
No, keep running. Everything is fine. It's just cutting in and out because we do have a lot of people watching. That's all. Okay. Don't worry. No.
It's your fault.
No, don't say that.
It's your fault at home.
But no, at least on my side, it's running smoothly right now, so I would try to keep going as much as you can so we're not wasting too much time. You know?
Who is responsible?
The others are attacking.
White Walker is, of course, responsible for freezing.
Just kidding, guys. I love you. We're all safe here.
I was thinking it might be me. Should I hop off? Or we're probably
just do the thing. We're going to keep on chatting here.
Let's go, guys. Let's do this.
Sansa and Theon. Sansa wants to know, why? Why did you do this? And they have a discussion about Bran and Rickon here. And she finally learns the truth.
Finally.
I was shocked. I couldn't believe he came right out and said it so easily.
Very quickly that this came out in this conversation. I don't know if I really liked it. Like, we've been waiting for this piece of information for her, like, in the back of our heads. And this is, what, their second, third time alone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the third time.
Already exposed. I'm glad she knows. Now maybe it'll give her something to aim for versus finding them. But I felt like this conversation was too easy.
Well, before Sansa was so cold and numb, you know, because she lost her whole family, and now you can see it in her eyes. She's something to live for. She has family out there somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this is going to change her behavior and the way she handles her situation.
Right. She's going to step up, I think, and be that motherly role and sort of like, okay, I have to be selfless, and I have other family members out there who are younger than me that I need to think for.
But what can she do for them?
Not be stupid and get killed?
I've never seen her as the smartest character in the game. But I feel like she's going to make a move, maybe reach out to Littlefinger, the only man she can trust.
I don't know, give Littlefinger some more information about existing Starks. That's dangerous territory, especially when they're both men, and in the North, where the men are, though.
I mean, she does have another person who's trying to help her out. Miss Brienne, who's right now kind of just sitting around with Podrick, who has a Valyrian steel sword.
Yeah, here's your new mission, Brienne.
She could go and find these two lost boys.
Interesting. So she just has to get that information out to Brienne. But Brienne swore to protect Sansa. She would leave?
This came from, also you have to kind of expand her oath and Karen Oathkeeper, is that she was devout to Catelyn Stark. And I think that it can be interpreted that she was supposed to take care of her children, not just her daughters, but I think her sons are just as included in that as well.
Hmm. Interesting. So after that scene, we have Roose preparing for Stannis. They're talking about how many men they have, and his plan is that they should just hold up behind the walls of Winterfell and let them all starve and mutiny out in the storm. But Ramsay has a different plan. He says something about taking 20 men, and that's all he needs. What's he got up his sleeve?
I'm really excited about this, like, stealth mission. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in his mind, he thinks he just has to kill the king, which is probably the case. So it's nice that I like that this is the first time in my mind that I'm like, all right, I'm going along with his plan. Actually, I want to see him go on the stealth mission and see what he can do.
And fail miserably.
That's fine with me too, but I want to see it at least.
I have finally figured out how I think I want Ramsay to die.
taking a lot of fun.
And this is going to happen in the mission.
I don't know. Okay. He's going to have to venture quite early. I just feel like it would be just like very, like, poetic justice for him to be murdered by Ghost on the order of, like, because he has all these hounds, he's kept Theon in the kennels, whatnot. I just want to see him kind of get hunted down.
But we saw Ghost is still at Castle Black.
I know.
He didn't go on the journey.
I don't know how this is going to happen. I'm just saying this is the vision I want to happen.
Okay, well.
I don't know. I still want Sansa to kill him. I want that so bad. That becomes less and less chance every day of happening, but I just want to see Sansa kill someone, and then I'm going to have the utmost respect for her, and I'm going to follow her throughout the rest of her story.
I don't know if I want
empowering women everywhere. Just kill somebody.
No.
I don't know if I want to see Sansa become an Arya-like killer. I think it would be much more interesting to see Sansa as a mastermind who moves the pawns and, yes, ends up causing his death, but doesn't actually bloody her hand. She becomes too smart for that.
I think she already kind of did a little bit because, I mean, you see Ramsay taking this bold move to say, I'm going to take 20 men and end this war for you, father. He's trying to solidify his spot because Sansa has planted these seeds of doubt into Ramsay's mind. So maybe she already has kind of...
The thing for me is I just don't think she has the courage to do it. And I want to see, we've seen Catelyn kill, and we've seen the women in this show do what they need to do, and I want to see her do that. I want to see her courage come out when we least expect it. I'm not saying I want her to become a warrior and this becomes something she does normally, but I just want to see it when it needs to be done that she's going to do it.
Interesting.
I'm going to shout out to the chat because they just came up with an idea that I'm going to steal. One of them mentioned Nymeria, which could...
Nymeria,
thank you. But this could blend my plan.
Ooh.
Not Ghost. Nymeria.
When was the last time we heard about Nymeria?
Season one.
I don't even know what we're talking about, but shout out to Nymeria, you guys. Did we get their name?
Styles. Yeah, that was Veronica Ashley. Thank you for your prediction.
Veronica.
And we also have Autumn Chicklis in the chat. Yeah,
yes!
Autumn, we miss you. I'm just keeping your seat warm.
Autumn, you lazy bum, get over there. I don't think we have anything else to chat about Winterfell, so let's head to the wall a little further north. Ooh. We have a short scene between Sam and Gilly before Ollie comes in. And so it's mainly between Sam and Ollie here about can you trust John? Why do you trust him? Sort of seeing that Sam's alliance still lies with John in this scene through thick and thin. And Ollie is, I wouldn't say he's on the fence. He's off the fence. I mean, he's, on the, he's on the other side of the fence.
He's off his rocker.
I feel like we Ollie already had this scene.
Every sideways glance we have from Ollie is this scene, pretty much.
I feel like I just keep seeing Ollie have this kind of same conversation over and over again. I'm not sure if this was finally the one that changed his mind.
No, this is the one that solidified his plan all along. This is one of those things where advice taken the wrong way, I think, comes to mind.
I think this scene was supposed to make us pause for a second and not just assume Ollie was against John. I think this scene, I think the intent of this scene was to say, hey, maybe Ollie can side with John, but I don't think that got conveyed properly.
No. That's not what I was thinking with. I left with also an Ollie that was either conflicted or not sent over. It would have been a different message if Sam had been the one to really turn him, and that was going to be Sam's role, that he could kind of step up into a leadership, like, inspiring position. Mm-hmm. But I didn't come across.
What I think is going to happen is Sam is definitely going to have to kill Ollie whenever he sees Ollie going after John, because they had this conversation and he knows that Ollie's not on his side. So I think that's just a future thing. But obviously, the advice was the choice you make may not always seem right to the people around you, but in the long run, it was the right choice. And it's like, what?
I'm
you can definitely take that the wrong way and go to kill John. Oof. Or try. Attempt.
Oh, I'm scared about Ollie.
Boy, scared. Yeah, I asked people in the chat thoughts on Ollie and
murderer. Yeah,
both Bobby and Keanu say, kill the boy. A little illusion.
We have to.
I like how we liked him last season, and now all of a sudden we hate this
did
guy.
Did we like him? He did kill a grit.
He saved John.
I didn't think she was going to kill him, but that's another discussion.
That's another one. So let's go with John. John is arriving in Hardhome, where all the wildlings are stationed at the moment. Mm-hmm. They row the boats in, and they are confronted with the Lord of Bones.
Yeah. Not for very long. He really becomes one with the bones there.
He became a pile of bones, yeah.
That was pretty awesome.
This was the perfect setup for what this scene sequence became. That's how we started it from the very get-go. Mm. All of us were like, oh, as he just like got murdered with his own staff and just stepped over. I was just like writing down, and now we've entered the political realm north of the wall. Yeah.
Wildling politics.
This is how this happened.
They're so cutthroat.
It was fantastic.
Did we see him stand up at the end? Did we see him be resurrected?
Ooh.
I did not, but something tells me he probably was with everybody else.
I would assume, because I think you have to burn the dead in order for them not to be resurrected. So
that didn't happen.
He could be. It wasn't focused on.
I wish they had shown him. I wish that would have been. That would have been very creepy.
He's not going to look very different, though.
Well, he's going to have his head smashed in. But then we have the meeting with the elders and the giant and all this political intrigue north of the wall.
One. I just want to say it, everybody. One.
You recognized the 1-1 name.
1-1.
Is there anything you can tell us that's not too much of a book spoil?
I can't tell you anything interesting. He is a character in the books, and he is named after the New York Giants quarterback Phil Sims, whose number was 11. And George R. R. Martin is a big football fan, so 1-1 is his name.
Bam. Nice.
But I can't really talk about him too much. I just, he's a cool dude.
But he's part of the elder meeting along with one of the things.
This is all completely, John never goes there in the book.
Wow.
So this is all stuff that happens off the page in the book.
It's a whole other world.
Yeah.
I even enjoyed the part where John mentions to Tormund how the long night. The long night is coming. So it's no longer winter is coming, because winter's pretty much here, right?
It's showing up in the north. We've got the storm coming in.
They're pretty much living in winter, so now it's the long night.
The long night.
But winter is here.
John tempts them with dragon glass and the promise that this is the ability to fight them, and we will provide you with this power if you come with us. That and land. Mm-hmm. And to which they debate, and some of them say no, but most of them say yes, but the Thens say no.
And who cares about the Thin?
I hate Thin.
Yeah, but then that guy ends up saving John or fighting with John when the others come, when the White Walker shows
up. Yeah, they have to become allies a lot faster than they thought they would.
So we get this reverse Saving Private Ryan scene where they are leaving the ocean, leaving the beach.
Spoiler for Private Ryan.
Oh, sorry. You don't know about Normandy. So, yeah, we get this amazing action scene. This was so awesome, and I have no notes, but others attack. This was intense. This was crazy. So we have the horsemen.
I have multiple notes. First one was definitely, well, first of all, we got the storm coming, whether covering up the light, going through the smoke. You got the gate, but most symbolically to me was the four horsemen, which to me is the four horsemen of the apocalypse. I think
agreed.
That's exactly what they're getting to. One of my favorite things about the scene was now that we've not only seen them, we had an epic battle that was shot fantastically, but also now all the Night's Watch and the Wildlings have been exposed to kind of the hierarchy, the insight of the White Walkers, which we as an audience have seen, but they've only been encountering them for the most part one-on-one. They've seen one person come to life. We've seen maybe some people get when they took the babies out of the woods, but this was everyone together. We got the layers of zombies. We got the horsemen. We have kind of the stronger knights who have the weapons that break swords. We have who I take to be a leader coming out onto the dock, making the very obvious
Night's King.
Eye contact.
Can we say that?
We'll call him the Night's King.
Yeah.
Seems to be.
But now.
Seems to be the popular name for him.
They have a story that they can tell. They can spread. They can show that this is not just a mass of White Walkers, but there is an agenda behind it. And I think that insight into the structure was very interesting to me.
Yeah, because it's not just brainless. Like, there's a thinking power there, and that's important to realize.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is really interesting to me. This hierarchy doesn't exist in the books, and it's interesting that they did this in the show. They're sort of giving it this personification in this Knight's King sort of dude, whereas in the books, it's the others are just very much a force of nature. It's like winter is coming. Winter is like the others, in a way. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of this thing that comes and destroys stuff. And
you know, I thought it was interesting, you know, these zombie-type creatures, the like Walking Dead kind of guys, they got shot in the head with arrows, and they didn't die.
Oh,
you know, I thought that was a universal zombie rule.
No.
They're different, no. Right? So how do you kill them, right? With fire.
So
it's dragon glass.
The rules of in the book is there's the others, who are the White Walkers. They are the ones with the swords, with the that shatter and stuff like that. They're the White Walkers. Mm-hmm. You kill them with dragon glass.
Mm-hmm.
Then when they turn someone into a zombie, that zombie is called a white.
Mm-hmm.
W-I-G-H-T. And the whites don't die by dragon glass. They die by fire.
Okay.
And I'm writing this down.
Those are the rules. I'm not sure if we've had that established in the show, but you do see one of the others walk through fire and is undamaged by that. So they are just dragon glass and we find out Valyrian steel.
Woohoo!
Valyrian steel.
Good thing I have it right here.
That was the moment we stood up and screamed.
We're gonna be safe, guys.
But I think that's I think it kind of highlights the point that in the end, I think it's gonna be a battle between ice and fire, right? I mean,
here we go.
Fire versus White Walkers, dragons versus
boom,
whites.
Boom,
boom. That's where it's going.
I want
right?
to see it. I feel like the dragons would just be able to go, and they'd all be gone, except for the others, you know.
It does. It interplays how we're going to see these worlds collide because we need dragons. We need Valyrian steel, which means we're going to have to go probably back to Valyria, which we know is
overrun. That's not going to work out. So there are only a limited amount of Valyrian blades left in the world.
And
when you lose them, they're gone. Like the Lannisters, before they took Ned's sword, they lost their Valyrian steel blade in a boat accident. It's lost to sea somewhere.
Well, let's go find it!
And then we also know that we can get more dragon glass, but it's going to have to be harvested.
Mm. And as pointed out by Tyrion Lannister, not even joking,
nice.
Tyrion Lannister says apparently they can't swim. Either.
Yeah. Well, there
so,
you go. That's kind of a zombie
that's a
right?
good thing to know when you're dealing with going to war. If they can't.
We also know the Night's Watch can't paddle very fast. They didn't make it out from that coastline very well.
We also know that 1-1's going to either like swim or walk all the way.
He's just going to walk to the boats and then, I don't know, hang on.
He
He's going to be
on
like
underwater,
a boogie board behind one of those boats or something. Oh, man. This was so awesome. Do you guys have anything more to talk about
it's
in this
hard
scene?
Yes. To, like, oh, please, go.
Oh, I just wanted to talk about that scene where they all seemingly commit suicide.
The lemming run, I like to call
Can
it.
Can you talk about that?
Can I talk about it?
Yes, you obviously know more than I do.
No, they just look like lemmings going up the side of a cliff. But, I mean, you can't kill them except by fire, so that was just a quick way down, you know? Screw the elevator.
Right, but they didn't get up immediately, so we were like, what's going on? And then all of a sudden, like, they all rise. That was
just a dramatic pause.
But I love that. Anyone having mixed emotions about, we kind of got an... who I thought was a very intriguing character in the woman elder of the Wildlings, who established herself as a good fighter, put her kids on the boat, so we learned that she's a mother, and then we have her put her arms over her chest as she cannot attack the white children.
Yeah.
What
that bummed me out.
That was good.
Yeah.
That bummed me out.
Well
so
done,
hard.
Show. Well done.
Like, there's absolutely no way to reverse them, right? Like, they're dead.
Not that we know
be
of.
Killed.
But they don't, I mean, this is a new thing to them.
Right. I just didn't know if...
It reverse otherism?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I think it's a one-way road, as far as we know.
Yeah.
How are you guys feeling about that? Like, I understood, like, the choice, kind of, in that they showed us that she was a mom, like, right before this scene, and were very evident about it, and then they put it so that she emotionally couldn't kill things that were in the bodily form of children.
Yep.
Right.
But I had also taken her to be a very smart, like, elder. She's in this council. So to me, it was kind of sending mixed emotions. I wanted to see her fight through that and... kill them.
I was wondering if she recognized them.
Yeah, that's a really great point.
And that was a big deal. That was a big reason why she couldn't do that. I don't know if it was just making her think of her children or if she knew these children from the last time the White Walkers attacked. Yeah. From, like, the Fists of Earth when First Man was all Night's Watch. Never mind. But, yeah, I'm curious if she recognized them or they just
I think we
her
see
children.
That struggle, though, across films whenever the enemy shows up in a child. There's always that hesitance.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's kind
I
of
thought
expected.
It was interesting that not only did... she not fight back against them, but also in the rest of the battle, I didn't notice any other white children of the whites, and I didn't notice anyone else attacking them. It was something that I felt they were very much reserved for that scene and that moment, and they weren't really present throughout the rest of the fighting, which to me was kind of interesting and was a line that normally this show, in my opinion, really excels on showing controversial topics in different ways that people go about them in times of war and struggle. And you, while you might see one person, like in this case, not want to fight them, then normally we also see the other perspective of someone who is willing to do so.
Hmm.
Like, right. We tend to see people have an obstacle, and some people either face it, and some people decide that this is their limit, and in, like in this case, more or less sacrifice themselves to it. And so it's interesting to me, it's such an epic fight scene, and a very long fight scene, that we didn't see the other side of that coin with this situation.
Interesting.
I agree with that, but I mean, you would have been okay with her killing these children, because
I wouldn't have. They're already dead.
I know. Like, if it's Ollie, sure, but, like, I don't think I want to see that.
Yeah, I would have been.
I think it would have rubbed us the wrong way.
I think it would have been really painful to watch.
Yeah.
Any rapid fire questions?
Yeah, I was going to say, Kristen, you're totally right, I think, about them bringing this story back to the other side of the wall. I mean, these are hundreds, thousands of people who just saw White Walkers, who just saw the Army of the Dead. Word is going to travel fast. I think it's going to travel faster than the wall. I think everyone's going to know about it soon. And as far as my predictions, we'll hold them for a second. And yes, let's do some rapid fire.
Nice.
Ready.
All right, rapid fire questions. Kyle.
Yeah.
Bo asks, who else would be the main evil here? Besides, like, the White Walkers.
Besides the White Walkers, the main evil. Besides Ramsay? I don't know. The other, they are the big evil. They are the winter that is coming. they are the evil. I don't know who else it would be.
That's as big as it gets.
Yeah. That's
if Cersei can be a White Walker, I don't know.
There you go. It's interesting to me because I think that I'm jumping into your rapid-fire question.
Yes.
Melisandre was the person who came in, and when she was introduced, I thought she was the villain, and now she kind of stands at this middle point where maybe she could be a tool to save people, because she has also picked the White Walkers as her enemy, or enemy of the Lord of Light. So,
I'll let you go ahead and rapid-fire. I'll let you field this one.
Okay.
Jaziel Pichardo.
Hello. Oh, here we go again.
Sorry, Jaziel. Will Melisandre have a compelling way to convince Stannis of killing his daughter in order to become king, or will his wife kill the girl to please the fire?
Between the two, whether the wife is killing or Melisandre is using her either feminine wiles or whatnot, I'm going to say combine the two, possible Melisandre convincing the wife, the mom, to kill her own kid.
Selyse is a goner. I think we've been saying that for a while.
So awesome. We've seen these women work together in the past, plot together, maybe even like there was a bath scene at one point.
bathe together, kill together, end scene.
One more for Kristen and we'll wrap this
Kristen,
up.
Kristen, ice dragons, question mark?
Ice dragons?
And there we have it. Thank you guys so much for watching this episode of Game of Thrones After Buzz TV After Show Recap. Oh wait, we gotta do predictions.
Yeah,
I'm jumping. I'm so excited. This episode has me so pumped. Oh my god, I'm sorry guys, I don't know what's going on.
You know what? Death is your sentence.
What's coming up guys? What's happening? What do we think?
I'm excited that Jaime has to align with the Martells. That's really exciting for me. I'm fine with that.
So you're thinking he's aligning, for sure.
I mean, he may be against it, but what choice does he have? Aren't they going to kill him?
It's true.
No Mother's Mercy in Dorne.
I'm not sure. I don't know. What's popping into my head isn't really a prediction, but it was a thing that I noticed, and partially because you, Kyle, mentioned it.
Uh-oh.
I think last week on The Gift, they ran out of time and, like, filmed too much. There was, like, two scenes in this week that they were, like, very blatantly, like, gift-type scenes.
Yeah.
One was the poison being called the gift. There was also another one that I'm blanking out at the moment, but I literally feel like there was two scenes that they wanted
to
do.
Dragonglass.
There we go. And he called it, here's the gift. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, we did get Dragonglass as a gift, but from Samba John last one. So I can overlook that one. But Arya,
that's
come
fine.
On.
But I think that those were both there. Like, let's film all these scenes. Oh, we don't have enough time. That being said, I want to see some reintroduction of some characters we've been missing. We keep talking about Bran and Rickon. Are they going to come back in these next two episodes?
Next season.
Nope.
Completely no one?
No.
No one's coming
no.
back?
No.
I'm holding
maybe
out
like
hope.
An
Ryan,
end
prediction.
Scene.
Give it to me.
I predict that this next episode, Jorah is going to kick some ass.
Yeah. Big time.
Jorah! And he's going to have a gladiator moment, total redemption, and...
then die, because he's covered in...
then die from grayscale.
Do you guys think Sir Alistair is going to let them through the wall?
Hell no. That's always been a war zone. It's like, no. That's going to be a huge problem.
Didn't
huge
look like
problem.
It in that little preview thing going on there.
Yeah.
But there we have it, everybody. Now I can actually do it. Thank you so much for watching this AfterBuzz TV Game of Thrones after show. Make sure, if you guys are watching on YouTube, to leave a comment, like, subscribe. If you're listening to it on iTunes, make sure to rate and leave a comment. And thank you guys so much for watching. My name's Kyle Maddock. You can find me at Mad Canard anywhere online.
I'm Kristen Snyder, and you can follow me at Cinematic Escape.
I'm Sarah Stratton, and you can follow Kristen at Cinematic Escape.
And I'm Ryan Malady. You can follow me at Ryan Malady.
Valar
Morghulis.
Bye, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.